This is the Saturday Night Live Friday Speaker Meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous held at Westgate West in San Jose, California. On September the 1st, 2000, our speaker is Kathy H. of Saratoga, California. The original recording of this meeting is kept in the SNL Tape Library. Please observe the traditions of Alcoholics Anonymous and do not play this recording for commercial or entertainment purposes. Please do not break the anonymity of the speakers or any other AA member at the public level. Thank you.
Everybody, I'm Kathy, alcoholic. And Billy D asked me to come speak tonight, and Billy is a good friend of mine. And I was taught in AA that when you're asked to be in service, you don't say no. And you know, I used to think of it that way, and today I actually want to when I'm asked to be in service, because AA has given me so much that I'm always happy to take the opportunity to give some back that was so freely given to me and still is. I want to welcome the newcomers tonight, and if you can't relate to my story, then I really encourage you to go to another meeting. Keep going to meetings until you hear something that resonates inside of you. I was told if you go to enough meetings, you'll eventually hear your story. And that's the magic, you know. And also, I was told that you listen for the similarities and not the differences. And I had to focus on that a lot, because probably like all of you, I thought I was very unique. And unlike a lot of people in this program, when I came into these rooms, I didn't get a warm, tingly feeling all over and that I had come home. I did not want to be an alcoholic. I did not want to be here in these rooms with all of you people. And just people like me and families like mine just aren't alcoholics and don't come around in these rooms, you know. Not to say that I'm better than anybody, but it was just my family, you know. And I'll just talk a little bit about what was like, what happened, and what it's like now. And I just want to say that I always, after I speak, I always say, you know, Kath, you didn't exude very much happiness or joy, and that's because I get so nervous. You know, so I tend to be sort of serious when I'm nervous. So I really am pretty much happy, but I get nervous, you know, especially speaking in front of people. It's not my shtick, but you know, and actually even the other day I went to an AA meeting that I normally don't go to, and on the way to it, you know, my committee was really talking. It just was saying, first of all, I was running late, so I heard, oh, if you're late, don't show up. And I heard that somewhere along the lines, you know. And the other thing was like, oh, I'm not going to know anybody there, but my sponsor was going to be there, and that's why I was going to meet her. And, you know, that's just my separateness talking and my disease talking. And, you know, when I went there, I did feel nervous and I felt awkward at first. But I started listening to people, and then I started connecting with the similarities, and I went, oh, yeah, I do belong here. You know, this is cool. This is okay. So, anyways, can I lower this thing? Okay, that's a little better. Let's see. Well, I grew up in Saratoga, as it says, and I grew up in the hills, and as a child, I was a real isolator from the get-go. I was a real tomboy, and I loved to just go exploring all over the hills, and I used to love to climb trees, and I would sit up in the trees. And from remembering early on, I was very introspective. I probably was thinking about a lot of things that young kids don't usually think about. You know, I was thinking about life and What's it all about, Alfie? I mean, intense from the word go, for what I remember. And, you know, I felt different. I was a redhead, first of all. And back then, it wasn't cool to be a redhead. You know, I wanted to be a blonde practically my whole life. I had freckles, and I just didn't feel like a part of, you know. And so I felt comfortable when I was alone. So consequently, I like to hang by myself a lot. And that didn't change for quite some time. But I have three sisters, none of which are in the program. And my mom and dad are not in the program, so I'm the pioneer in my family. And just recently, I'm really looking at that, you know, I may be the only alcoholic in the family, but the ism is there, you know. And I think that for me personally, it was a big deal when I came into, you know, got sober because no one in my family believed that I was an alcoholic, you know. But I, and most of the time, my real drinking I did away from the home, you know, after I was 18. But kind of jumping ahead. But let's see. You have to forgive me. When I get nervous too, I kind of leave my body and I don't think as strongly as some people up here. But anyways, I think the type of kid I was sort of set me up for my alcoholism, is what I think, because I believe that my drinking was only a symptom of my disease, that my disease really has to do with my thinking and my perception. And I was just thinking the other day that when I was really young, I think I had the concept of gratitude, but I had it all back-ass work because I knew that I was fortunate, but it never was enough, you know. I didn't understand why I wasn't happy, why I tended towards depression, why I was such a serious young girl. And why I hung out by myself so much, you know. And when I remember my mom asking me when I was 15 years old if I wanted to go to therapy. And that was a big deal. I was really scared. But there was part of me that thought, well, sure, why not, you know. I knew something was not quite right with me. So, you know, and I decided to go. And and I think that helped me. But when I was younger, I used, you know, I used food to alter the way I felt and to comfort me. And when I was in high school, I discovered marijuana, and I really liked that. And then later alcohol, and I really liked that. So for me, that was more magical than the food. And when I was young, junior year of high school, I started smoking dope downstairs, and I would keep the window open. I'd smoke in my bedroom, and I would listen to Joni Mitchell and look through my art books, and I'd get really into my world, you know. And I don't know if any of you know Joni Mitchell, but it's like, woe is me, you know, real intense lyrics, and boy, I could relate about love and about life. And then when I was finishing up high school, a girlfriend of mine asked me if I would like to head out on a Trailways bus and go to Colorado and work for a summer. And it sounded really good to me because I hated school. And I didn't do well in school, except for the art classes. And but my dad was always yelling at me about, well, yeah, but what about history and math? And, you know, but again, that wasn't my thing. And, you know, I just heard something at a meeting the other day, and it really, I kind of went, ouch, you know. But he said, winners do what they have to, and losers do what they want to do. And I just, that really hit home for me. Not that I think of myself as a loser today, but that's pretty much how I did my life, you know. If I wanted to do it, I did it. If I didn't want to do it, I didn't. It was like one big knee-jerk reaction. And I didn't want to do my homework, I didn't do it. If I didn't want to go to school, I didn't go. You know, if I wanted to get high, I got high. You know, I mean, it was all what I wanted to do. I never really thought about consequences or where it was leading me or any of that. But, you know, I did get on that Trailways bus, and my girlfriend and I, we smoked dope at every stop we could. And I know this is the Alcoholics Anonymous meeting, but, you know, I did other things along the way, so that was just, it's just my story. And you know, I had been introduced to beer in my senior year at Keggers, and I really liked that. And but, you know, I wasn't 21, so it was harder for me to get the booze. And I do remember, I'm going to jump around, that's just what I do. But when I was, I remember growing up, you know, my dad's really into cooking. He's Italian. My mother's Irish. And they love to throw parties. And, you know, there was always a lot of people in the house and a lot of booze and food and good times, you know, until, you know, you heard yelling and strong arguing and tense conversations, you know, that kind of thing. And I remember, you know, picking up as a child, you know, remember picking up like a bourbon and taking sips of it. And it didn't put me off, you know. I felt that kind of that warmth that hard booze gives you. And you know, I kind of liked it. But anyways, you know, I did like alcohol a lot. And I didn't know how to drink it very well. I mean, when I was, my parents would go away. My older sister would get us some booze, and, you know, usually I drank really disgusting stuff like Old English 800 or, you know, malt liquor or something like that to get buzzed really fast, and couldn't handle it very well. But anyways, in Colorado, my drinking really took off. I tried to get really drunk on 3-2 beer a lot, and that just doesn't work very well. But, you know, back in 1978, you could drink in bars pretty easily, not get carded. And actually, by age 20, I was bartending. And I ended up staying 3 years in Colorado, and I fell in love with it. I love the mountains. I still do today. But I like the isolation of Colorado. It was up in the mountains. It wasn't very popular at the time. I lived in Winter Park. And I love to ski, and I started skiing, and I just didn't see any reason to go to school or come back home, and so I partied a lot, you know. And I did things that we all do, you know. I drank and blacked out a lot, and back then, you know, you could hitchhike. It was pretty safe, especially up in the small towns, you know. So I would do things like get off work, you know, and I'm bartending, and I'd switch to the other side and start drinking, and then I'd hitchhike home, and I wouldn't remember hitchhiking home, and I wouldn't remember who picked me up, and the next day I'd see some of my buddies on the slope, and they go, man, you know, you were trash last night, you know, and I go, oh, are you the one who gave me a ride home, you know, and just stuff like that, and a lot of drama. I met my ex-husband in that town, who also is an alcoholic, and you know, we drank and we did a lot of using together, and you know, I never thought of myself as having a problem. Through the blackouts and through all the drama and high emotions and my life not too together and always having to borrow money, and you know, one time I had to be carried out of a bar. It was ladies' night, $2, all you can drink, and I had never tried tequila before, so, you know, what the hell. So I was drinking margaritas, and You know, the last thing I remember was trying to do a line on the back of the toilet, and all I could do was hear stuff like, well, get her out of here. We better get her to a doctor, you know. And it's like I couldn't see a thing, but I could just hear stuff going on. And, you know, the hospital was 2 hours away to Denver, and I was just sicker than a dog. They never did bring me to the hospital, but I feel like I remember being hungover for a good week, you know. And I never did like the smell of roses, lime juice after that. You know, that's the kind of thing I did, and I don't think normal drinkers black out, I don't know. I did get married to that alcoholic, and I remember I was very concerned about his drinking when we got married, and but of course I never looked at my own drinking or using, and you know, I don't know, you know, the problems that I had and my life not working and, you know, my family, you know, on my case about when you get your shit together, what are you going to do with your life, you know, because all my other sisters went to college, got degrees. My father is a highly educated man. My mother's an educated woman. You know, just things were expected of me, and the more that things were expected of me, the less I wanted to try. I always felt like, in and of myself, you know, I was a zero, and I had very, very low self-esteem. And that's one thing that I really had to work on in the program, because it, to me, I feel that it's one of my character defects. And you know, Dr. Paul talks about in the book, there's more to quitting drinking than quitting drinking. He says, you know, I may not be much, but I'm all I think about. And, you know, I mean, I totally relate to that. And I'm one of those people that everybody thinks had a ton of potential. But I just, my older sister used to tell me, you have a fear of success. And my other sister used to analyze me, you know. And I just, you know, if I couldn't be what everyone wanted me to be, then I didn't even want to try. And I didn't have the courage or the strength to tell myself that, you know, it was worth trying, that it was okay if I wasn't perfect. And that's why, you know, I love that slogan. It's progress, not perfection in here. Because if it was perfection, I probably would have been out the door a long time ago. By the way, I don't know if anybody wants to know it, but I did get sober on March 27th in 1991. And I was thinking to myself, you know, my story isn't really spectacular or special or dramatic or anything like that, but it's special to me because it's the way that I went to get here, you know. And I felt nervous about coming and speaking to this group because I don't come to this meeting very often. And you know, I'm at the place in my sobriety where I'm able to start a different kind of thinking. You know, the fear comes up and the self-doubting comes up, but then there's this other voice that I've been developing that says, you know, it's just a bunch of alcoholics just like you, you know. And I already, right off the, you know, the bat, it's like, oh yeah, we have that in common. And so we may have drank in different places and drank differently and lived different lives, but you know, I think the feelings around why I drank and, I don't know, I think that that's what we share, you know, is may not be exactly the same, but that's always been a comfort to me to think about, even though I see so many different faces and people come from different places. The feelings are the same. And let's see, what was I talking about? Wow. So, yeah, my underachievement. When I got married, I stayed married for 4.5 years, and I was a very unhappy lady, and my ex-husband's drinking was really escalating. Okay, mine was too. But you know, he was the screwed up one. And if he would only stop staying out all night and stop doing the things he was doing, we'd be pretty happy, I thought. And so finally, I don't laugh. I gave him an ultimatum, and he chose booze. And I thought, you know, that's cool, whatever. Prior to that, I came into the program of Alcoholics Anonymous through the back door. I started in Al-Anon because I was married to an alcoholic, and I was very unhappy, and I didn't know how to deal with it, and I didn't really even know what an alcoholic was. It was my older sister, who is in human resources and knows a lot about people, who suggested I go to an Al-Anon meeting. And I went to an Al-Anon meeting with her, and I did for a couple of years until my ex-husband and I got a divorce. And then I decided got rid of the alcoholic. I certainly don't need to go there anymore. And so actually when I stopped going to Al-Anon, my drinking started escalating again, because I was drinking and using right along with my ex-husband, but, you know, I don't know what it was, but the more he screwed up, the more scared I got. So I did try to somewhat be the one to hold it together, you know, pay the bills and do those kinds of things. But so when he was gone, then it was just myself, and I don't know, you know, my drinking really started to take off. And, you know, I was a type of drunk that would tell myself I was just going to have a couple of glasses of wine and come home, be respectable, you know. And I was a type of drinker that never worked, and I would end up drunk, and actually I did a lot of driving in a blackout. And that's really what brought me to my bottom. My story is that I was out on a date one night, and with Angelo, hairdresser, Italian guy, and I was going to be very respectful and have a couple of glasses of Chardonnay and go to this jazz club and all of that. And I ended up on First Street in downtown San Jose at the Cactus Club, just blasted out of my brain, you know, bobbing and weaving to the John, and, just bumped my head really hard on his little sports car trying to get in. I remember that. And I went to his house and then got in my car, and I was driving in a blackout, and I don't know if you guys know that area, but if you go Dave's Avenue, it comes out to Saratoga Las Gas Road, which is 4 lanes. And there's a stop sign there, but I just shot right across it. And it was on the other side, it was like 3 in the morning. On the other side, I came to. And I remember the first thing I said was, "Oh God, I can't tell anybody about this." And actually that morning I had to catch a flight to L.A. to go to a design convention. I was in school studying interior design at the time, and it was a big to-do. And I managed to get on the plane, and, I was just really hurting, you know, and my sister picked me up at the airport, and I got in the car, and she just turned to me and she said, "Jesus, Kath, you know, you reek of alcohol." You know, and I was just like, don't give me a hard time. Let's just go to your house, you know. And she lived in this huge industrial loft in downtown L.A., and we got there, and she was pretty disgusted with me because she was looking forward to a visit from her sister and, you know, connecting and doing sister stuff and having a good time. And I was so sick, I just wanted to go to bed. And so she said, well, you know what, I'm going to go get a few things done. You just try to get your shit together or whatever, and I'll come back. And so she left me alone in her loft, and I just felt like crap, you know, in all ways. And I, at the time, I mean, I ventured off into other realms of seeking spirit and God and all those kinds of things. I've always considered myself a seeker. And at the time I was into crystals, and I do this thing where I use a crystal as a pendulum. I don't tell this very often. And I sat on the floor and I got my crystal out and I said, am I an alcoholic? And the thing started going, pom, 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 you know, for yes, because I was going, this is yes, and that's no, you know, it was going yes, yes, and I was like, oh shit, you know, and I put it away. I'm like, oh, that's a bunch of hogwash. That thing doesn't work, you know. So then I went and took a bath, and I'm sitting in the bath, and that's when I had my moment of clarity. That's when I conceded to my innermost self that the jig was up, that, you know, my ex-husband was not the only one who was an alcoholic, that I had a problem with alcohol, that I had lost my ability to control my drinking. And I remember saying to myself, you know, Kath, what's it going to be? You're going to kill somebody while you're driving in a blackout? You're going to kill yourself? You know, what's it going to take for you? And I remember at the time I knew a woman who was in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, an older gal that I used to go up to her house on the hill for this women's group. And I remember thinking to myself, all right, when I get back, the only thing I could promise myself is when I get back to town, I'm going to call up this lady and I'm going to ask her, I'm just going to talk to her. You know, I'll just do that. But, of course, at the time, you know, the thought of never having a drink again was just too much for me to handle. And actually, that wasn't even my last drink. I agreed, you know, with myself to go talk to Peggy. And then that night, my sister and I went out, and, you know, I feel like I knew I was an alcoholic when I was thinking to myself, I don't want to drink, and the words were coming out of my mouth, I'll have a, and I ordered a drink. And then the drink came, and I'm looking at the drink, and I'm going, I don't want to drink that drink, and I picked it up, and I was drinking that drink. And then we went to a restaurant after that, and I ordered another drink. And I'd say halfway through it, I put it down, and that was it for me. And I haven't had to pick up a drink since then. I did come back into town, and I did call Peggy, and she's been my sponsor ever since. She's what I call my Eskimo. I don't know if you guys have ever heard that in the program. The story goes that, there's this guy. He's out in the middle of nowhere in Alaska, I guess, or whatever. And he breaks down, and there's nothing around for miles. And he starts walking, and he's like, "Please, God, you know, help me." And pretty soon, along comes this Eskimo, gives him a ride back to town, and he's talking with all his buddies. And one guy goes, well, I guess, you know, God answered your prayers. He goes, hell, it wasn't God, it was the Eskimo. No, you guys don't get it? Okay, so so Peggy's my Eskimo. And I'm very grateful to her, and I'm very grateful to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. Like I said, it wasn't love at first sight, and was really hard. And when I told Peggy about sitting in that meeting the other afternoon and feeling squirrely, she said, you know, remember when you first got sober, you felt that way. You just hated to go to meetings, and, you know, you felt awkward around people, and it just was painful for you, you know. And I was like, oh, yeah, you know. And I think that for me personally, you know, you probably hear it a lot, but I really feel it is, you know, that AA saved my life. And I don't know. I was thinking tonight, you know, about speaking, and it's like, well, what would I want to convey? And it would be, of course, you know, of a message of hope. And because when I, before I got sober, I was just so hopeless. And I just felt like I was on this merry-go-round that I was never going to get off, and that I was never going to be happy. And, you know, after all, you know, like, what the hell was wrong with me? I mean, I just didn't get it. I didn't put two and two together. And I used to ask people, do you ever have this thing where you don't kind of can't focus, or you're in this fog until like 2 in the afternoon? Do you ever get that? You know, and I never really thought about it. It was the alcohol. Of course I was in a frickin' fog till 2 in the afternoon. You know, it's called a hangover. And, you know, but I don't know. I guess it's you call it denial, right? So it's like when I got sober, it was like just things started, you know, coming together for me, and that was good and that was bad. I did a lot of things that they told you not to do. I didn't do it the way they told me to do it. I didn't do enough of what they told me to do, and it's not that I recommend that, it's just that that's what I did, and I'm really grateful that in spite of myself, I'm still sober today. And my sponsor says, you know, she has like 26 years of sobriety, and she says, you know, it's not that I have 26 years that impresses the hell out of me. Well, that does, but she goes, it's the fact that I'm still grateful. And, you know, the more time I get, it seems like the more grateful I am. And I don't know, you just, for me, I appreciate the fact that I've been given a chance to live a life that's useful and one that I feel like I'm awake for. And I love that after all these years of seeking in all these different places, that I finally have a really a loving, connected relationship with my higher power. And, you know, all I have to do is, I'm really grateful that I remember my last drunk. And I'm really grateful that I remember how it felt to be sitting in that bathtub and saying, please, God, help me, you know. And it's, I can't deny when I think about, you know, in the early on in my sobriety, I just, for a good few years, it was like, am I an alcoholic? Am I not? Am I really an alcoholic? Maybe I'm not, you know. And I used to think about it, and I go, well, let's see. You tell yourself, you're not going to drink, and you drink. Well, and then you tell yourself, well, if you drink, you're not going to get drunk, and you get drunk. And then you tell yourself, well, if I get drunk, I'm certainly not going to get behind the wheel, and I would get behind the wheel. That was me. That's what I did. But as soon as I asked for help, reached out, and asked my higher power, gee, you know, I haven't had a drink since. So that's pretty powerful for me right there. And that may not be everyone's experience, but I guess for me, you know, I really, really get that God does for me what I can't do for myself. And if you're new and you have trouble with the God thing and that freaks you out, or you just are disgusted by the whole thing, don't worry about it, you know. I really encourage you to just keep coming back, and I don't know, just if you could try to have a concept that there's a power, something that's greater than you, yourself. And in my sobriety, life has not always been perfect, and I didn't get it all together and do all these wonderful things, and now everyone's proud of me, and you know, I'm the shining star in my family, quite the contrary. I'm still the fucked up one. I'm still the highly emotional one. I'm still the weirdo that goes to those meetings. And, you know, and I'm really happy I remarried. I'm married to a wonderful man in the program. And he's really, really taught me a lot. We come from such different worlds. You know, only in Alcoholics Anonymous would we have met. And, I mean, you know, he grew up in Berkeley on the streets and was a bum. And I grew up in Saratoga Hills, was a doctor's daughter. You know, he's African American, I'm white and Italian and Irish, and you know, couldn't be any more different. But he's one of my heroes in the program. Just seeing where he's come from and where he is today, and also he's just opposite of me. That, you know, I'm still intense, I'm still highly emotional, I still am introspective, and he's Mr. No Big Deals, you know. And I'd like, you know, I think that after hanging out with each other, we just had our fifth anniversary. We've been together almost my entire sobriety. That's the part I didn't do right. You know, you're not supposed to get involved in the first year, you know, all that stuff. And now I think we balance each other pretty well. It's nice. And we try to live and let live. And we haven't always had it easy. We've been through a lot of really tough times, from my father getting used to the fact that I was in an interracial marriage. You know, not that he was prejudiced, you know. It's like, but, you know, it was... I was raised with, you're not a prejudiced person, but you don't marry someone like that. And it's like, you know, guess who's coming to dinner kind of thing. And it was just par for the course, like, oh, only you, Kathy. You know, I guess I keep pushing him, you know, to grow. My stepson He was really, really hard on me. I'll own it, me. I don't know. I think he I won't say he's an alcoholic. I don't know if he's an alcoholic or not, but seems to get into a lot of trouble whenever he puts drugs and alcohol in his body. And that was really, really hard. And I won't go into detail about that, but... There's just been things that have really pushed me, and I'm sure they've pushed Arch too. But this is my story, and I'm talking tonight. So, but my point of all this is that you know, I believe just because we get sober doesn't mean that we're struck wonderful and life is terrific. And I mean, some people will get up here and tell you everything's great. You know, they've got a great job, and now they have more money than they ever could have imagined, and they travel, and they do this, and it's great, and, you know, and that is wonderful, and that is growth for me that I can say that, because, you know, rejoicing in other people's good fortune is something that I've had to work on, because I was envious of a lot of people that you know, I was constantly comparing my insides to everybody's outsides, and you know, people that seemed like they didn't have any hard things going on in their life, you know, I don't know, being sober and having all these wonderful teachers in my life and people that I can talk to, the steps to work and my higher power have really given me such a freedom, like just a freedom to do things differently if I needed to. You know, I don't usually share this, but I'll just share it tonight. Is, you know, my stepson, it was really, really hard for me in our home. It was very disruptive a lot. And, you know, I'm talking every night, you don't know what you're going to come home to. And it was cops, and it was screaming, and it was yelling, and it was broken windows, and it was stolen car, and it was, just being violated, privately, as far as my feeling like my home wasn't a safe place at times, and I was really losing it, and my husband was losing it too, in a different way, because this was his child, and you know, we just went through a lot of years of tough times where we almost went our separate ways because it was so tough. And I really feel like it was, you know, the gift of this program and the support of this program. And like I said, being given the freedom to, like, think about things differently. And for about 6 months, we lived apart. We still stayed married, but we lived apart. So Arch could finish with his son, and I could get my sanity back, you know. And I didn't talk about it while it was happening, but I feel more comfortable talking about it now because I guess, you know, what I like to share is that sometimes, you know, life isn't always the way we think it's going to be, or it doesn't have to look exactly how we think it has to look, or we don't always have to do what we think we have to do in order to, I don't know, get approval or feel a part of, or feel like I'm doing it right or whatever. And you know, now that I look back on that time, it was like the smartest thing I could have done. And you know, it was all out of love too, you know, because it was me, I think it was like totally live and let live. You know, I was honoring my truth and what I needed to do for myself, and I was also honoring my husband's truth and what he needed to do, and neither one of us making the other one wrong. And you know, that's what the program of Alcoholics Anonymous has taught me. And you know, with my family, I try to be an example, and I try to just, you know, they don't have to know. I don't feel like I have to sit them down and tell them all the gory details about my drinking and using to prove to them that I have a problem. It doesn't matter today if they get it or not. I'm sure that they get that I'm showing up differently. You know, my self-centeredness, my laziness, my what's in it for me-ness was always in the forefront, you know, when I was drinking and using. And it still can be when I'm, you know, clean and sober. But the difference is that I do it, even though I may feel like laying on the sofa instead of pitching in with the dishes after someone else has prepared a wonderful meal for everyone, I get off my ass and I help. You know, instead of laying there because I had too many glasses of wine, and it's like, you know, My sisters all have children, and I'm there for them, and I'm there for my nephews and my niece, and, you know, I'm not loaded while I'm there with them. And, you know, two of my sisters are supportive of my being in the program, and just the other day my sister really acknowledged, you know, that she thinks it's great that I go to meetings and I work the steps. And, you know, she's told me, she goes, I've seen a big change in your life. And that meant a lot to me. I wasn't holding my breath for it, but it meant a lot to me. And because, you know, I was just talking to my sponsor the other day that there are times when it's really lonely to be in my family and be in sobriety and be in recovery. You know, they drink, and they don't get me a lot of times, you know. And also, I sometimes feel that I wish I could give them the gift of a higher power, you know. But, I know, that's something that everybody has to come to on their own. But, you know, I just think to myself, God, you know, what would I do today if I didn't have something greater than myself to turn to ask for help, to turn shit over to? You know, I think I'd just be totally nuts. And I don't know. Definitely, I think I'm probably more even keeled than I've ever been, which is, you know, something that I aspire to, because I was on such a major roller coaster when I was using and drinking. I really appreciate that kind of just those, like, doing good, you know. I'm not super, super high, and I'm not super, super low, but I'm just doing good. And I'm getting more of those kind of days in a row, you know. And I really believe it's because I'm working the program, and I'm in service, and it's kind of like, what's that saying I hear? You can't, you know, if you wait around to think yourself into the right way of acting or doing, that's just not going to happen, you know. And I think for a lot of years in my sobriety, I was waiting for that to happen. I was waiting for, you know, something to change in my thinking that would make me want to do things differently. And, you know, that saying, if you keep on doing what you're doing, you're just going to keep on getting what you're getting, has really hit home with me on a few things in my life lately. It's like, oh, yeah, you know, so I can't wait for myself to think about doing it differently. I just got to start doing it differently, you know, like they say, getting into action. And, you know, like bring your body and your mind will follow kind of thing. And do I talk to 9:15 or 9 o'clock? Okay, just checking that out. anyways, I said to my friend Gary, I go, yeah, I have to speak for an hour. He goes, you got it in ya. So I'm sure I do. but anyways, I think I wanted to read this little thing in the book that I really like that kind of explains how I feel. It's on page 25 in the big book, and it says, the great fact is just this and nothing less, that we have had deep and effective spiritual experiences which have revolutionized our whole attitude towards life, toward our fellows, and towards God's universe. The central fact of our lives today is the absolute certainty that our Creator has entered into our hearts and lives in a way which is indeed miraculous. He has commenced to accomplish those things for us which we could never do by ourselves. And that just really touches me. I really like that, you know, that our Creator has entered into our hearts. Because, you know, today, you know, my goal is to really cultivate an attitude of gratitude and to be a kind person and to be helpful and to not be so self-centered and to not be a bitch and not be so demanding of people, places, and things. You know, Bill W. Talked a lot about his battle with depression, and he really connected a lot of it to the demands that he placed on the people around him and the things and the places, you know, that the demands that they be a certain way in order for me to be happy. And I really relate to that, because when I start getting caught up in that, I can get real unhappy. And I just know that I wouldn't be working on all that stuff if I was drinking and using. The thought about trying to be useful and kind and helpful and a good person just wouldn't be coming to my mind if I was drinking and using, you know. And you know, and maybe you're sitting there and you're thinking, I'm not thinking about that either, you know. I'm just trying to think about not taking another drink. And I can relate to that. I'm one of these alcoholics that the obsession to drink was not completely removed from me. And I had a really bad day on Wednesday at work. And after work, I was just in a foul mood. And I remember thinking to myself, you know, this is the kind of day that a drink would have, you know, been what I did. I go home and drink, or go to a bar and drink. And so there it was, you know, it still comes up for me. It can come up for me when I'm angry or emotional or when I just want to get out of whatever I'm feeling. But it can be really seductive too, you know. I could be at a really nice restaurant and eating really good food and looking at other people around me with glasses of red wine or champagne, and that it looks so. There's something about it, you know. It's still seductive to me, and I don't expect that I won't ever crave alcohol again, but I'm really happy that, you know, and I hope I continue to have it, is that when that comes up for me, I know what to do. You know, I could call my sponsor, or I can ask God to help me and just, you know, take it away right then and there. You know, so I don't know. You know, my sponsor also told me early on in my sobriety something that really stuck with me, is that when I got sober, I just couldn't seem to stop crying. And, you know, she told me that quitting drinking is like death. You know, you have to grieve it. And I really related to that. You know, because I felt a tremendous sadness and a tremendous void where alcohol used to be. And I just couldn't fathom how I was going to do my life without alcohol. And, you know, that's why we have that slogan, you know, one day at a time. And I still try to do that one day at a time thing to the best of my ability. And I don't know. You know, if you're new, I really hope you keep coming back, and I hope you hear something that speaks to you, you know, maybe softens you a little bit. I'm really, you know, tonight before I came here, I got off work early. It was really great, and so I had time to, I took a bath. I like the water, and I put on some, you know, some really what I call spiritual music or soft kind of music, and I hadn't listened to that in a while, and I also, not to, you know, to boast or anything, but I also had time to, you know, I chose to meditate for 20 minutes, and because I was really nervous about doing this, and so I really, I don't know, you know, it's just what works for me, but I think anything that we can do in our lives that puts us in touch with that place inside of us where I believe God dwells, you know, because I believe that God is inside of us. But it takes effort to take the time out to slow down and to quiet ourselves to find that place. And I think any vehicle that you can use to get there, besides alcohol and drugs, you know, it's like if you find your higher power hiking in the mountains, then hike more, you know. Make sure you do some hiking regularly. If you find your higher power in the water, make sure you go in the water. If you find your higher power sitting in the quiet outside, you know, I mean, whatever it is. But I think it is our job to, it's my job for my sobriety and for myself to continue to seek him. And my sponsor always says, you know, seek him in the morning. And I really try to do that on a regular basis because it makes my day go a lot better. But I also heard in this program, you know, that you could start over. You can start your day over any time, any time. That was so amazing for me. That was so beautiful because, you know, there were times when I wasn't seeking in the morning. I was too busy, you know, and I would just be tied up in knots midway through the day, and this thought would come, oh, yeah, you know, I can connect now if I want to. And there really isn't a time where I haven't reached out and tried to connect or asked for help that I haven't received it. And so, you know, I wish everyone in here well, and I wish you, I don't know, I wish you the gift of sobriety, and I just want to say that I really feel like, you know, the AA and being sober has just given me so much hope, and I really am grateful for AA for that. And it's, you know, even when I have days where I feel really down and out, and I feel like I even have days, you know, hey, where I feel like I don't know if I want to do this deal anymore. It's just really, it's too freaking hard some days, you know. And I had one of those days the other day, you know, and my husband just said to me, he goes, you know, tomorrow's another day. And he has this great way of keeping things simple, and I'm so complicated. And, you know, the next day was a new day, and I didn't feel as crappy. And, you know, it's a good thing that if I had my choice, and I would have ended it that day, and not that I was suicidal, but you know how we think. It's like, I don't want to do this anymore. It's too hard. What's the point, you know? But the point is, you know, you get to have some fun in life, and you get to feel good. You don't feel hungover anymore. You start to gain new friends and wonderful relationships with people that are doing the deal too. And, you know, I have buddies that I go hiking with and ski with, and I have fun with my family most of the time. And I'm still trying to figure out, you know, what I want to do when I grow up. I have a job. I get paid. And I have a roof over my head. And I get to, you know, do a lot of things that create a lot of joy and happiness in my life. And so I know for a fact that if I was using and drinking, that I'd still be that really emotional, really dramatic, really intense, really screwed up, really unhappy, really confused young woman. And, you know, AA and being sober gives me a chance. Every day gives me a chance to look at my shit, to do the best I can, and to give me hope for a better life every day. Every day, you know? And so now, I really, you know, even though I have thoughts sometimes like, oh yeah, you know, that beer looks really good in that frosty mug. You know, if I really, really think about it and I carry it one step further, like, would I really want to drink? No. So I don't want to go back to that shit. No way. No way. I mean, some days suck in sobriety, but there's no way that I'd want to do that deal anymore. So thank you very much for letting me speak tonight. And that's it. I appreciate it.